Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
Welcome to the latest episode of The Shamrock. I'm Pete Sampson, joined by Matt Fortuna, as we try to focus on talking about Notre Dame football while watching college basketball in the background. Notre Dame's football spring practice opened on Thursday. They'll be back at it on Saturday. Had a little bit of viewing time Thursday, access to Marcus Freeman. Saturday, no viewing, but access to Tommy Reese and the quarterback, so it'll be a chance to talk to Tyler Buckner. Drew Pine, I almost said Jack Cohn. I'm still, I guess, getting over last season. But I don't know, Matt, if there was any like massive takeaways, and we'll give Mike Bray and Notre Dame basketball it's due later, as they're about like 2 hours from tip-off, 3 hours from tip-off as we record. But I don't, what was, you had sort of a column about like it feels more like Marcus Freeman's program than Brian Kelly's now in a substantial way. What did you sort of take away from opening day?
Yeah, I mean, it was just different. I mean, there's only so much you can glean from a 25-minute press conference and not on any actual football viewing. But everything Marcus Freeman has kind of been advertised to be over the last, 4 months or so since he was promoted to head coach, like, that's still all there. It didn't just go out the window because he coached a game in the Fiesta Bowl. They lost it, and that was that. You know, he immediately starts talking about recruiting. He's very engaging. He's talking about the mental development of his players as much as the physical development of them. It was interesting for me, and it hadn't dawned on me until I think a couple of weeks ago at the Combine. I ran to Marcus's agent. We were talking for a bit, and big conversation. It dawned on me. I'm like, you know, I don't think I've ever actually met Marcus in person. Like, he's come on the show. He's been on a million Zooms. You know, he's been pretty good with correspondence with all of us, but so that was like the first time I was like in a room in person with him, which sounds crazy to say out loud because he's been here, you know, at least as a coordinator for over a year now. But like the energy is real. Like, I don't know if you obviously feel more and see more in person than you do on Zoom or whatever. Mm-hmm. But just, you know, the overall vibe and look, whether Brian Kelly was a great coach or a bad coach, I think 12 years of anybody, like, there's definitely a rhythm and frankly a boring rhythm to it, right? Unless it's like Jim Harbaugh, where like, all right, like, so-and-so's got to work on his traits today. All right, he's an RKG. Like, it was just very monotonous, even if they were going 11-1 or 12-0 in most recent years. So definitely a breath of fresh air in that regard. And I'll be curious to see, you know, how this team grows throughout the spring, you know, from a personnel standpoint, because there definitely are some pretty big questions that you address in your story.
There is the energy that Marcus has is undeniable, and you just cannot miss it. So that comes through anything he does. I think, you know, we've talked about that, written about that. I'm sort of more interested a little bit in sort of his, I think this gets to his recruiting chops and passion there, like his willingness to sort of get down in the weeds with that part of program building, like, kind of doing the dirty work, the stuff that is probably not that fun to do to an outsider's perspective, but he seems to enjoy, like, even just down to, you know, is the pot of gold recruiting initiative that they have done off and on over the last few years. But like all the coaches are wearing green at the start of, you know, for practice. Marcus changes into a like different green thing hoodie after practice. But like he doesn't try to like stand out or be above anything. Whereas like Brian Kelly's disposition for practice often is arms crossed, observing, obviously not literally from 30,000 feet, but like you can sort of see the CEO vibes there because he sort of removes himself and keeps everything at arm's length. Like Marcus is dapping people up, giving a lot of bro hugs. He's sort of like more down in the weeds a little bit. And it's just that level of energy is going to be fascinating to me because when you talk to administrators around Notre Dame, the vibe that you get there is like he says yes to everything. I went to his talk at the Mendoza School of Business a couple weeks ago, you know, whether it's stuff in development, it's stuff alumni clubs, meeting with the faculty board, a lot of human touch with him, a lot of energy. And like those parties, when you talk to them about like, what do you think? Because you kind of want to cross check it versus what we think, right? It's all the same stuff. It's like, wow, God, this guy's energy is off the chart. Like, I was talking to somebody who's, I think, a faculty board member, said like basically that they'd seen Marcus more in what, 8 weeks, 12 weeks than they saw Brian Kelly in 12 years. So his sort of passion to sort of be around campus and connect with people in a very physical, real way has not gone unnoticed with people around the university. And look, if you want to get your transfer approvals fast tracked, if you want to get Goog 2.0 built, if you want to raise money for that, like you gotta politic around Notre Dame. And I think, you know, Marcus can politic without coming across as a politician, which is not what we would describe Brian Kelly to do.
No, that's a good point. I mean, I think anytime anyone who removed from like the emotion of the last 4 months with Brian Kelly, that was one of the first kind of adjectives that would come up in conversation about Brian Kelly, right? Politician. I think he probably got a lot of that out of his system by the end or second half of his Notre Dame tenure. But you know, at the end of the day, he did still leave and that's that. BK at practice was always amusing because especially, you know, again, the first half or so pre that 4-8 year, you could set your clock to where he'd be with the quarterbacks. Yep. What, you know, throwing the beanbags at them, yelling at them and cursing at them the way like a lot of people initially were introduced to Brian Kelly, which I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. He was brought in as the quote unquote quarterback.
It is college
guy.
Football, right? Like, yeah. Harry Hiestand just returned to the staff. Like, it's, well, college football, folks.
People, well, it's funny. I'm sure we talked about this before, but like when Chuck Martin coached quarterbacks, like I remember talking to someone in that room who was like, yeah, I can't wait to go and get MF'd by Chuck Martin today. But when he does it, like there's something like fun and invigorating about it. Whereas when BK does it, it just comes across as like demeaning. I don't want to play for this guy, but that's neither here nor there. Maybe we could get Chuck Martin on the podcast at some point for some more stories, but we might need a five part keg series, for that, yeah. One. Freeman about the quarter, Marcus Freeman talking about the quarterbacks yesterday though, was like the biggest, like for me, takeaway as far as, all right, like things really are different here. Cause he got asked about them two or three times. And if Tyler Buckner's not starting, something crazy will have happened. I think this is, you know, pretty obvious how it's going to play out from a football standpoint. But his answers about it were, you know, like Tommy Rees played the position. He coaches the position. I'm going to rely on him for the data. I'm going to rely on him to make decisions. When I'm over there, I'm there to observe because I'm, you know, a linebacker. I'm a lifetime defensive coach. I want to learn. Whereas, like, whoever was offense coordinator or quarterbacks coach pre-2017, that was like a title, and Brian Kelly would just come and coach the quarterbacks. And the way it turned out, I'm not saying it's Brian Kelly's fault, but the quarterback play was not all that great the first 5 or 6 years of Brian Kelly's tenure at Notre Dame, but he was the quarterback guy. And that's kind of was his shtick when he got to South Bend. So that was the biggest difference for me just as far as how that position is going to be handled from a CEO standpoint. But the other part, I mean, you know, we talked about this, I think, last fall camp. You know, one of the days we had a full practice access, Brian Kelly spent the whole day with receivers and he was chopping it up with them and he's talking, going back and forth with them. And I think we both heard afterward, like, yeah, that's Brian Kelly knew you guys were there today. He's never once worked with the receivers. He has no idea what play calls we're doing. He's talking to them about how to run routes that they don't even know about. Like, I don't think, like, that's the politician, right? Whereas
yes.
I think Marcus Freeman could go over to Chancey Stuckey's room right now. And as he said, I think yesterday pretty explicitly, like, I'm going to be involved, but not to like judge you or coach the coaches. Like, I'm still learning at this and I want to see how you guys go about your business. And again, when you're 36 and you've spent your entire career both playing and coaching on one side of the ball, I think that's kind of the only way to do it. But it's nice to hear a guy kind of humble himself, so to speak, and not assume he has all the answers just because he's up there behind a podium.
I was interested. I mean, aside from decoding the words of like who's starting and who's not. And yeah, if it's not Tyler Buchner, I'll be absolutely floored. But I thought it was interesting when he talked about like, hey, I just want to spend time with the quarterbacks like without Reese, without any sort of evaluation going on, just to like get to know you, to like intentionally build a relationship there. That's not something that I think I would have, like, Brian Kelly didn't do that with like Kyle Hamilton or Isaiah Foskey last year. Like, he's not just like, hey, let's just hang out. And so that, I mean, that part is interesting to me. Does it have anything to do with how Notre Dame finishes this season? I don't really know, but it's just kind of one of those things where new boss is definitely different than the old boss. But you know, when you look at the questions Marcus Freeman has to get answered before Notre Dame goes to Ohio State, I mean, they had an offensive line that is down its center, returning captain, a receiver room that I think people in the program are a little, I've heard mixed things on like how good that group can be. You know, defensively, what does Al Golden's scheme look like? Where do the linebackers fit in? J.D. Bertrand has got a cast on his left wrist. Maris Leifau is back from the broken ankle. Jalen Snead is pretty undersized freshman, but really quick. The secondary being rebuilt with Brandon Joseph, who I think we walked by when we were leaving the stadium, is not somebody that blows you away physically, right? Like, when Kyle Hamilton walked by, you knew Kyle Hamilton. You knew it was Kyle Hamilton. But yeah, how do those pieces fit back together? There's a lot for Marcus Freeman to get figured out in addition to just figuring out how to be a head coach.
Yeah, no question about it. And that's going to be the interesting part. I mean, getting to actually see these guys and see this roster, because again, haven't seen it yet and haven't seen what seven new coaches interact with their players as part of one coaching staff. And that was part of what I asked Marcus yesterday. It was essentially, you know, is this a new first day of school feeling? I mean, you've done so many firsts already and, you know, you've been in the public spotlight and this is nothing new to you, but like today was the first day with this entire coaching staff. You got to just go out there with your stamp on this program. The Fiesta Bowl, you know, it was a game. It was a big game, it counted, but there were a lot of coaches in that game who were not part of Notre Dame anymore. And there are a lot who have joined since. So getting a chance to see this entire group interact will be interesting. I thought, and you touched on this a little bit in your story yesterday, I'll be curious to see what Al Golden's defense looks like. Because it sounds right now a little bit different than I think what Marcus Freeman and people around the program were presenting it as before he was hired, as far as we're not looking for a guy to come in and put a stamp on this thing. We got a good thing going and the new coordinator will essentially assimilate into what we're doing. I don't know if that was because they had someone else in mind at the time or what, but you know, Al Golden's a proven head coach at two pretty big stops and obviously comes from the NFL ranks where he was in the Super Bowl just a month ago. I'll be curious what that's like. I'll be curious about the Golden dynamic as well. I mean, outside of Harry Heise, I mean, he's got to be the oldest guy on that staff by probably 20 years. I mean, it's that Dylan McCullough, maybe. I mean, it's a young,
yeah,
Dylan
McCullough is kind of late 40s, but yeah, it's a lot of 40 and under types on that staff. I mean, you got like Reese and O'Leary in particular are on the young side.
Stuckey, Mickens.
Yes, all of them, really. I mean, Stuckey is like a little bit older, but he's young to coaching.
Young head coach, yeah.
Yeah, or young in terms of experience, but not young in terms of literal age. So how that group gets together, and that's, you know, Marcus has talked about, you know, not coaching the coaches. And I think that was one of the things that Brian Kelly at least brought up for like when the program dipped. He didn't do that enough. But I don't really know what, like, what is Marcus Freeman going to tell Tommy Rees about RPO schemes? Like, I'm sure he has some thoughts as a defensive guy, but I think Marcus has enough humility based on some of his comments and the way he behaves to not think that he's going to come in here and be like, well, I'm the head coach, so I have all the answers now. That was always kind of one of the things we enjoyed with Clark Lea, right? Like, the fact that he didn't have the answers was a feature, not a bug. And I think Marcus probably has a similar mindset.
Yeah, absolutely. The other part that stood out to me yesterday, and you know, we're parsing and probably over reading into things because it's first spring practice press conference, but he got asked about the idea of hiring a mental development coach or a mental or performance coach. And I just thought his answer really showed just how different he is, not just from Brian Kelly, but frankly from most college football head coaches right now. I mean, he immediately started talking about, you know, trauma that student athletes have gone through in before they got to Notre Dame, or that they're going through. And how do you get to that? How do you connect with players on their level? And how do you overcome or get through the obstacles that may be inhibiting players from performing at their best day in and day out? And nothing we haven't, like, I'm pretty sure you've sat down with sports psychologists at Notre Dame for stories in the past. I have at Notre Dame and elsewhere, and it sounded a lot like that. But to hear a head coach say it and to get up there before a podium, I mean, that's not something, frankly, we've heard. I'm not sure we've heard that in such vivid detail really anywhere lately. We definitely haven't heard it at Notre Dame like that.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Yeah, it certainly, it's like, part of the way he described it was like, yes, we're going to do this, but it was also sort of like, I'm not really sure how I want that to be structured yet, because it was more of like, yeah, we're anything that we can do to help our players get better and improve and find an edge, we're interested in doing. So that, you know, does that mean you're going to find the next Amber Selking to come in there? Maybe. I'm not really sure. But at the moment, she's not attached to the football program anymore. So that, I'm not really sure where that will go. I don't know if there's anything like, was on the field. I'm not sure there was a ton. Like, I watched Chancey Stuckey coach a little bit to sort of get a read on him during the observational period, like as high energy as you would expect. You know, it's his position group, I think, will be fascinating during spring to see if Deion Colsey can take a step from a competitive level and sort of put his physical assets to use as a going into a sophomore year. I thought Lorenzo Styles looks like, to me, the most talented of those receivers athletically. I was talking to somebody during practice, and I was like, you know what, it would be really cool to see if Tobias Merriweather, the incoming freshman, could have been an early enrollee, because that he could have made a difference, or at least given Notre Dame another piece to work with. I will say, like, two early enrollees that impressed me and impressed people around the program that I talked to were Jadarian Price, the running back from Texas, and Jaden Mickey, the cornerback from California. They both, I think, have been pleasant surprises, maybe ahead of where Notre Dame hoped that they would be. And then Josh Burnham, the linebacker I've written in our mailbag, is probably the one that has stood out the most. Just in terms of his compete level, work ethic, all that stuff, that the boxes you can check before how do you read the pulling play side guard? That kind of stuff all will come later. But those three guys, Burnham, Mickey, and Price, were three guys that I think have not stood out in a Blake Fisher kind of way as early enrollees, but at least sort of like, yep, we feel like we have something from the perspective of the Notre Dame staff.
I'm curious. I mean, what do you think would be a realistic expectation for a guy like Price this year? I hear that. I think of Logan Diggs last year, who had a fine season and probably benefited from Chris Tyree getting injured. But I think he's in a similar place in the pecking order at this time right now as, say, Logan Diggs or even Audric Estime was last year. I mean, what do you think?
Yeah, it's hard to read Diggs because, I mean, if you look at his last year, I remember talking to people on staff in August and they were just like, holy crap, this guy is good. And then he got COVID and then he had to like take it all down and come all the way back. So that was a challenge there. But, you know, if he had a freshman season like Logan Diggs had a freshman season, I think Notre Dame would take that in a heartbeat, assuming the offense is still clicking, because then Logan Diggs and Chris Tyree sort of split what Kyren Williams and to a lesser extent Tyree were last year. But Price's quickness, I think he's listed at 180 pounds, and I wrote this like, some guys are listed at 180 and you're like, man, you're kind of cut up. It looks like, you know, maybe
190 on their site.
Okay. Yeah, maybe he's up then. He looks like he's pushing two, but in a good way. So it's that, all that is to say, like, he physically looks like he's put together. He's got some real good quickness. That does not mean that he will be able to hit the hole and run through contact and, you know, avoid a Bertrand Kaiser tackle at the second level. But at this point, when you're talking about early enrollees, there are exceptions. Blake Fisher was one of them. But at this point, mostly it's like, all right, does this guy have the physicality and athleticism to make it at the college level? And Freeman talked about this a little bit on Thursday. It's like most of these guys get here and they're just like, crap, can I do this? Because in high school, I was crushing it, no problem. And here I'm with grown men who have been in Matt Bayless's weight program for 2-3 years. But I think Price, Burnham, and Mickey in particular are guys who have already sort of checked that first box about, like, yeah, they know that they can make it, and the coaches know it too. But, you know, Price, a good freshman year would probably be a couple hundred yards. Mickey, a good freshman year, maybe you are the nickel in some situations, or, you know, get into sub packages. You know, Burnham, I'm not sure where he would fit at linebacker right now, because they've got a pretty good depth chart as is. So there's a lot to get sorted out, but I think that overall there's none of the early enrollees have blown the staff away. But I also feel like they look at all of them as a group and don't feel like, maybe this one is not what we expected in a bad way. I don't feel like they're concerned that there's a miss in that group at the moment.
The other running back who had a starring role yesterday in yesterday's press conference, the bus.
Yes.
We've seen a lot of him on social media. I selfishly speaking, I always had a soft spot for that guy because I just loved watching him play growing up. And I was at a Notre Dame alum dinner or booster club dinner years ago, and I ended up seeing next to him, and he was just the nicest human being ever. So good to have him back. But even that was a question that was directed at how is he helping this team, to Marcus Freeman being like, hey, he's in my office every week. I'm taking as much as I can from this guy because it's
that was pretty interesting. He's been there, wasn't it? I mean, I asked that question as like a it's like of taking a flyer for a story I'm working on for a couple of weeks now. Basically, like what it's like to go to class with Jerome Bettis. Because like that was like, hey, there's an NFL Hall of Famer in my group project. And I know that he is involved with Notre Dame football and talking to the players beyond not just like the come talk to the team, we'll put it on social
media. Ricky Waters did a few years ago, similar.
Yeah, it's not that. He's around the team. He's interacting with players. He's like, I believe this is secondhand, but like had watched tape with some players and was picking things out. And the guys were just like, holy crap. Like, how do you see this stuff? So that, I mean, that all is kind of fascinating to me. So that'd be maybe a fun story down the road later this spring about just like what it's like having it around. Cause he's had classes with at least one football player on the team. Which I think would just be kind of this cool, like, yeah, I know this guy. I played at Notre Dame football just like you.
His part in the group assignment. I'm waiting for that.
Yeah. No, it's I'll save that for the story. like he hung out on spring break with some guys who were in the class that he was in, which is crazy to me. They just happened to be in the same spot. So they played golf. I think some of these feel-good stories can get a little overdone at times, and maybe you and I are just like a little bit
jaded,
skeptical, jaded, cynical, whatever. This one I feel like has all the good stuff, though. The fact that there's an NFL Hall of Fame running back just hanging around your football program who actually is a really nice guy and a huge, huge deal is a cool thing. And I give Notre Dame football credit for not just capitalizing it in a content way, but capitalizing on it in like a meaningful, like this can actually help the team as it is right now by having Jerome Bettis around.
I'm picturing him in Inter Hall football like he is in that Geico commercial where they just hand it off to him and a bunch of like 30 and 40 year old out of shape men are just bouncing off him. At least that's what I want to see. I'd also like to see a replica of him in today's college or pro game because like that just doesn't exist anymore, especially in the era of spread offenses.
No, he is a running back from a bygone era. But I think that's sort of a fun spring sidebar story to jump into with Notre Dame. I don't have any other observations other than to say I was pretty tired showing up Thursday morning because I was up very late Wednesday night, imbibing while watching Notre Dame Rutgers in the first four. I'm assuming you watched.
Apparently, you weren't the only one imbibing later that night.
Yes. Happy St. Patrick's Day, baby, indeed. We all should aspire to be Mike Bray at least for a week in our lives. I don't think I could.
I don't know if my liver can handle that, Pete, but I'll try.
A week would be tough. It's like, I feel like Mike Bray lifestyle is essentially like going to Vegas. It'd probably be good for a long weekend and that'd be about it. But yeah, Dana O'Neill, one of our college basketball national reporters, had sort of a column on the Mike Bray experience today, a couple hours before they tip off against Alabama. I know Notre Dame hoops is like people are a little hot and cold on Bray at times, but I feel like beating Rutgers, and especially if they get Alabama today, really turns down the temperature on the people that needed it turned down with, which is not the Notre Dame administration, just for the record.
So I thought about this the other night when I didn't have the heart to watch all 9 minutes of it, although I'm sure it was substantial. When Buzz Williams came out after Texas A&M's NIT win, basically.
I turned it off. I made it 3 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, I guess he handed out like 9-page packets to everyone in attendance showing why. And that's Buzz. He's a different breed. But I say all that to say it is with great irony that Notre Dame was the last team in over A&M in another sport with the chance to play Alabama in a championship event 1 year later. And I actually like Notre Dame's – well, not actually. I mean, I think anyone would. The SEC, I think, was a very underrated conference this year, and the ACC obviously wasn't that great. But I absolutely think Notre Dame can and will win today against Alabama. It's a very winnable game. The first four obviously was not like the grand ceremony that – or grand destination, I should say, that everyone hoped for. For Notre Dame, but with the way it played out, I think you yesterday mentioned the Maui Invitational fears, but I can't think of like a time or there a moment where Notre Dame men's basketball had like the national spotlight to itself because of the way the game played out, because of the fact that they were the only game that night or at that time slot. And any sports fan who was watching sports that night was watching Notre Dame men's basketball. And what'd they see? They saw a really exciting game. They saw Mike Bray drop a couple F yas after going to overtime when usually coaches will just be way too strung out. And they saw him with John Rossing in the postgame interview being himself. I mean, that was the fun part. Like, me and you, like, I mean, we were amused by it, enjoyed it, but like, he probably would have been like that if they lost too. Like, just the whole, like, happy St. Paddy's Day, let's get some Irish whiskey. Like, it was great. Like, that was the type of program advertising that you can't pay for. Like, if you're a high school basketball fan or a younger basketball fan, look, Mike Bray probably won't be there by the time these guys are in college, but you're watching an NCAA tournament game on Wednesday night, late at night before you go to bed. How do you not see that, like, snapshot and be like, whoa, that would be a cool guy to play for? He's a little different than the red ass high school coach who's making me run sprints at 5 a.m. the next morning. Like, it was a fun event. We'll see how far Notre Dame can take it. I had them beating Bama in my bracket, losing to Texas Tech. But,
same.
You know, you finished second place in the ACC. And again, I know this was maybe the worst season in ACC history. I think it was in terms of bids. You've got a chance. I mean, it would be amazing if they get to the Sweet 16 and play Duke. Given that Mike Bray is the only K disciple to BK, and he's done it 5 or 6 times. And K is obviously retiring. I don't know if anyone had heard that over the last 9 months. That would be incredible.
Yeah, like, what a resume line that will be whichever coach gets it. I sent Mike Krzyzewski into retirement.
I just hope for Bray's sake, and I can't imagine it would, but like, especially now because, you know, Ian O'Connor wrote a biography on Coach K, and Coach K is retiring. He's in the news every day. So much has come out lately about his relationship with Bob Knight and how it was fractured. And there's obviously some ego involved with that on Knight's end. Like, you would just hope, like, Bray doesn't end Kay's career, then Kay just says yeah. to hell with you.
Sends him a very terse letter afterwards.
If there's anyone who could let that roll off your back, Mike Bray would be the guy.
Yeah, he would not. If you've read Wright Thompson's story on Mike Krzyzewski,
yeah,
good for you, because it was awesome. If you haven't, you should.
But yeah, Ian's book too has the same anecdote you're going to say here. But go.
Yeah, it was after Duke lost to Indiana, or Duke beat Indiana in the Final Four. And Mike Krzyzewski was desperately seeking Knight's approval. And then Knight sent him like kind of a jackass letter, it sounds like, and completely rattled Krzyzewski. And they were in a meeting, and Bray basically, because, I mean, they were preparing for the final, right?
They were preparing for the title game, and they were there was like a funeral, yeah.
And Bray basically stood up and said, F Bobby Knight. And everyone's like, all right, okay, let's get back to it. Like, Bray would do that for himself if something came to that, which I don't think that will. The idea of a Sweet 16 matchup of Krzyzewski and Bray would be... that would be pretty delicious, because, like, in that Wright Thompson story, I mean, Bray also was quoted as saying basically Krzyzewski's wired to eat his young. He's that competitive, which I'm based on some of the other anecdotes around how vindictive Krzyzewski can be. I'm not sure how Krzyzewski interpreted that quote.
Yeah, I mean, Krzyzewski was banging the drum publicly when Notre Dame joined the ACC about, why are we doing this? Like, why are we...
Yeah.
Let him have one foot in, one foot out, which I don't think was a unique opinion among any player or coach of any sport in the ACC. But anytime Mike Krzyzewski puts his name behind an opinion, that becomes gospel and that becomes headline news. And even Mike Bray, I think, had to call up Tom Noy after the fact to basically be like, back off. Like, we're in. Let's have fun with it. Read Dana's story today. I mean, it was short. It was sweet. If you've been following this program long, you probably won't learn anything new. And I know that doesn't sound like a great advertisement, but it's just a fun read. Like, it was like an 800-word roller coaster of the Mike Bray experience, which, let's face it, I'll be the first to admit, after last year when they go, what, their fourth straight year without making the NCAA tournament, and you lose your finale by 42 points.
Worst loss of your 21-year tenure.
And a kid in your backyard who happens to be the son of the Notre Dame women's coach is lighting it up down the road at Purdue and you didn't get him, like, I'll be the first to admit, like, all right, what's there to point upward at right now? Then Blake Wesley happened. And Anthony Solomon, you wrote a story too. We don't want to overlook your contribution to the Notre Dame men's basketball, your yearly contribution to the Notre Dame men's basketball beat. But
it's yearly when they make the tournament, and I've been at the Athletic for 4 years. So
I had one this week on Neil Ivey and the women's team as well, who play Saturday in Norman, Oklahoma against UMass. And then, assuming they win, would get four-seeded Oklahoma in Norman, Oklahoma, in a round of 32. And that's another team that, if you've been following, extremely talented, extremely young. They upset NC State this year, who's a number one seed. They also lost by 19 to UConn and lost twice to Louisville, another number one seed, by 20-plus points. So very boomer-bust potential with that team. I think if they could get to the Sweet 16, that would be a very, very solid next step for Neil Ivey and her program. They play Saturday, so tomorrow. But your story detailing the impact Anthony Salomon had, I thought was pretty enlightening because, again, based on everything I just said about my opinions of this program after last year, Mike Bray comes and says, I need to get me a Marcus Freeman.
Yep.
And he went out and hired a guy who obviously has done a great job, but, you know, as far as, you know, exciting the fan base, bringing back a guy who'd been there twice isn't going to win the PR battle.
If Brian Kelly had done that, we would have killed him.
Yeah. No, absolutely. You know,
absolutely. But this is like one of many things Mike Bray can do that Brian Kelly never could, including taking your shirt off in the locker room with a lay and having people take photos of you. But Salomon, if you look over their track record together, they've had, I think, 12 years. Bray's 22 seasons at Notre Dame. Salomon has been here for 12 of them. They've made the tournament in 10 of them, which leaves, if my math is correct, 8 years or 10 years without Salomon, and they've only made three tournaments in that time. And I think they may have only won one game in those three tournaments. So it is not a stretch to say almost all of Mike Bray's success at Notre Dame has come with Anthony Salomon, which is different than saying it's down to Anthony Salomon. But Coach Slow, as he is affectionately referred to by current and former players, he's part of the sauce that makes the Mike Bray operation go. They're not a great defensive team, but they're no longer the worst major conference defensive team, which is what they were a year ago. They're good enough on defense. And Salomon is, I think Jordan Cornette, former guest on the Shamrock, described it as a lethal weapon where Mike Bray is Mel Gibson and Anthony Salomon is Danny Glover. And it's like you can't really do a standalone with either of them. You want them both there at the same time playing off one another. And like that's Mike Bray and Coach Slow.
But while we're on the subject of Notre Dame assistants, shout out to Martin Inglesby, Mike Bray's first point guard. He's got a big one against Villanova today, which I believe his father played at back in the 70s. So a lot of personal history.
He's a Philly guy.
His brother, I think, won an Emmy this year for writing Mayor of Easttown,
mm-hmm.
which also features, if you look very closely, has a Martin Inglesby cameo in it. There's a photo of a Notre Dame basketball player in a pizza shop, and it's Martin Inglesby.
I did not know. I'm sure this detail was in Brian Hamilton's story on that.
I believe it was. it was funny because that show was amazing, and I remember watching it, and like, who watches the credits, right? But I noticed that last name, and I knew he's a Philly guy, and I DM'd him immediately. He's like, yeah, you're watching. That's my brother. I was like, holy cow. Good for you. So
the Inglesbys
have an Emmy and a tournament bid. In a calendar
it's a good year.
It's
a good I was family. Talking to Bray last week for this. We had a Zoom, and it was the day of the Colonial Championship game. And I was joking, like, hey, I'm surprised you're not like wearing Blue Hens stuff today. And apparently their video, I think it's maybe their analytics guy, Pat Rogers, who Notre Dame hired back this year from Delaware, was on a train down to Washington, D.C. to see Delaware play in their championship game, which was highly entertaining. Jameer Nelson Jr. on that squad.
Yes, Jr.
So they're a fun watch. I don't know how fun they will be to watch against Villanova, but it's nice. It's nice to have like a little bit of like Notre Dame basketball spice around this time of year because, I mean, you think back of the Rex Pfluger tip-in against Stephen F. Austin, got the Pat Connaughton, Jaron Grant, Wisconsin and Kentucky games. Yeah, Demetrius Jackson, Zach August. Like, I'm not saying Notre Dame needs to aspire to be Duke or Kansas or Gonzaga, but like they have enough material here, and I think enough of a brand name to do make what happened 4, 5, 6 years ago a little bit more regular than it's been.
If Blake Wesley comes back, and that's a big if, I mean, coupled with that recruiting class and the momentum from however long this run goes, that's as well set up a Notre Dame basketball program in terms of having outside expectations that I can remember.
I mean you got to go back to the Zach August, Demetrius Jackson group.
But that team lost two NBA players. Like they made that great run of back-to-back Elite Eights. They were the only program in the country to do it at that time. And I just remember thinking, going back after both seasons were over, I thought that 15 team was an absolute Final Four team that got a terrible draw in the bracket and came up short in the Elite Eight against a historically good Kentucky team. Whereas that 16 team, I thought, probably overachieved a little bit, got a little more favorable draw, and came up short against the Carolina team that was awesome that year. Next year's team, if Wesley comes back, should be pretty damn good. And, like, who knows what the ACC will even be anymore? Like, the whole identity changes when Kay – no, but when Kay and Roy go out the window and you've got two first-time head coaches, and Hubert Davis has seemed to have fought through the growing pains this year at North Carolina and got them to play their best ball at the right time right now. But, like, there's no Kay. There's no Roy. Boeheim's Boeheim.
Louisville the brand of the today. League is not
– it's
not the same.
It's different. Not at all. And, you know, the quality of play, we'll see what happens. I mean – Notre Dame's loss of Virginia Tech doesn't look so bad in hindsight, seeing what the Hokies went on to do to Carolina and Duke in the two games since then. Steve Forbes has a good thing going early on at Wake Forest right now, but ACC basketball is definitely obviously different with so many new faces, but probably not
Louisville,
the meat grinder
in that group too. You know, new face there, right. So it's you would think. With all those new faces, it is set up quite nicely for Notre Dame to continue to make noise and get on a little bit of a tournament streak here moving forward.
Here's a trivia for you, and I say this because when it came up when I was there last week, I was like, you could have given me 13 guesses. I would have got it wrong. Who won the ACC men's basketball tournament last year?
It wasn't like Georgia Tech, was it?
Yep.
Was it? Okay.
Yeah. I think they was it Duke? They won a game on a COVID forfeit to help them advance, but they ended up winning it all.
Okay. Yeah, I think that may have been how they beat Duke, if I'm not mistaken. I don't know.
But Duke didn't get in last year. That wasn't a good Duke team.
Right. It's those conference tournaments. I know Notre Dame's win has had quite a shelf life, and like people remember that, but I think if it's not the team that you cover or follow, people have a hard time remembering who actually wins those things because it gets swallowed up immediately by the NCAA tournament.
Right. I mean, if you're an Iowa fan, how do you feel about the season? I don't know. I don't know. Now, I think Virginia Tech beats Texas today. And a lot of people think, well, you know, don't get caught up in the hype of them just playing really good for 4 days and coming out and playing good again. But I think Virginia Tech is now playing the way they should have been playing all along. They played really good early in the year and lost a couple close games, and I think they started out like 2-7 in conference. So that's why I like the Hokies. But I'm with you. I mean, conference tournaments are incredibly intense and fun when you're at them. But unless you do something historic like Kemba Walker, who won a national title that year as well, or Jerry McNamara, who on one leg, you know, willed Syracuse in 06, I think, to the Big East title, the shelf life on those is not particularly strong. But, you know, Notre Dame's is one of them, especially since they were new to the ACC.
Virginia Tech's will be too, right? Like, that will be one. Like, will we be talking about Virginia Tech basketball year for now? Probably not. But, like, around Virginia Tech, that is going to carry a lot of weight for a very, very long time.
One other shout out, I don't know how we forget this. You mentioned Jordan Cornette, and I remember seeing a picture of him today. Joey Brooks, former Notre Dame player, is assistant with Cal State Fullerton, who plays Duke today in the 15-2 game in Greenville.
How about that? Even more Notre Dame connections around
March Madness. Former Notre Dame spring football tight end, Joey Brooks.
Yes. God, I think that that may be a subject we get into our podcast next week. Spring players that are being hyped through the roof, despite evidence, no evidence to support. What
was he hyped through the roof?
depending on where you read your Notre Dame news, yes.
Okay.
I don't think The Athletic existed at that point, but yeah, that was
no, it did not.
So, but yeah, we will be back next week. Thinking, I believe that we have quarterbacks on Saturday and linebackers with Al Golden on Tuesday, if I'm not mistaken. In terms of access next week, we'll recap Notre Dame's performance win against Alabama or loss. And then they most likely play Texas Tech in the second round. And then you could start talking about a Mike Bray, Mike Krzyzewski matchup.
Or Tom Izzo. I mean,
or Tom
Michigan
Izzo.
State can just as easily.
Bob McKillop, if you will. I mean, why not?
Yes.
All possibilities. So it's nice to be watching Notre Dame basketball in March and have it fit into like the best weekend of the year, because I absolutely adored sitting on my couch for about 10 hours yesterday watching basketball, and I will be doing the same today and tomorrow and the next day.
Before we go, we cannot let this pass without a shout out. New Jersey Generals defensive line coach, Robert Diaco, better known as Bob around these parts. He's back and he's in Jersey. And he's working for Mike Riley again, who he worked for in Nebraska. So good for them, I guess.
I don't know if anyone will be able to watch those games. I don't know what they're on, if they're on, if they will even be played.
Peacock, but premium maybe.
But I would love to check that out to see how energy vampires have evolved in the modern semi-professional game.
Could have said any better myself, Peter.
All right. On that note, we'll wrap up this episode of The Shamrock. We'll be back next week to talk Tommy Rees, Al Golden, more spring practice. Hopefully, Notre Dame basketball will continue to entertain and delight us. Although, double overtime past midnight, I could skip that. But yeah, March Madness, it's the best time of the year. Spring football is just a nice sidebar to the whole endeavor. But we'll be back next week to talk about that on The Shamrock. So until then, he's Matt, I'm Pete. Thanks for being with us.